Worth Repeating is made possible by series sponsorship from the 8020 Foundation, the City of San Antonio Department of Arts and Culture, and the Lifshutz Foundation.
Some of the stories may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to the Worth Repeating podcast. I'm Tori Poole. This is the first part of the live storytelling event recorded at the Irma and Emilio Nicolas Media Center at Texas Public Radio in downtown San Antonio. The theme was Transmitted, stories about the things that are passed from a person or a place. Can you think of something that was passed on to you? The first storyteller is Alejandra Meramera Sanchez Alaniz. Alejandra shares a story about the inspiration for connecting with others across radio waves.
My name is a mouthful. I got it, Davey. Thank you. It was around 2005, and I was traveling to Buenos Aires. Che. And if you know the Argentine glamour, you know what I'm about to speak about. I rolled up to this beautiful museum. It almost looked like the Landa Library in Alamo Heights by Trinity. Very small, very quaint, black and white tiled flooring. As I walked inside, I had no idea whose museum it was going to be. I was 23, pretty green behind the ears. I just graduated, was a newlywed at the time. As I walked into this palace, it was the home and foundation of Maria Eva Duarte, Eva Perón. Walking into her museum, you saw the projection of her funeral procession, which was hours long. And the background was a tango music playing, a bajo fondo. And you were transfixed as you walked in. You knew this woman's voice and her story were something to know about. As I walked to the back, seeing and listening to her most powerful speech, I learned that she was one of the first female radio show hosts of Latin America. Not only that, being progressive as a feminist and as a social justice warrior, she was on the radio waves before she was Evita. Now, when you saw this woman speak, it had some conviction in her bones. And I said, I want to do radio. This was 20 years ago, mind you. And I'm going to fast forward a little bit 20 years later. Now, I'm a teacher, and you know those teacher hours we have to do. Who's some teachers in here? Anyone in here? Okay, all right. Those painful hours we have to do in the summer, right, Helen? All right. So I'm looking at the catalog, and I see Bilingual Language Academy. Awesome. Given by Dr. Carmen Tafoya. I said, wow. I'm going to take this class. I'm stoked about it. I want to meet her. I've heard so much. I've read about her. I've read her work. And at the time, I started to write my book of poetry. So me thinking, I'm going to kill two birds with one stone. I'm going to take and fold up my lovely little poetry in one little paper and have a conversation with the majestic Mera, Dr. Tafoya at lunchtime. What was I thinking? Who was I? I don't even know. But I said, I have to meet this woman. I approached her, and I said, Dr. Tafoya, I'm Alejandra. I'm a writer, and I just want to share my work with you, but I'm also a teacher. That conversation was pivotal in my life. She told me, Ale, I would love for you to reach out to Jen Yanez Alaniz, the poet laureate, Irene Lara Silva, Joe Reyes Boitiel. Here are the phone numbers. Call me. What do you need? After reading my poetry, I knew I had something going on here that was great. Fast forward, 2 years later, I was doing a poetry workshop given by our poet laureate, Eddie Vega. And it was about stories about San Antonio. And I gave a beautiful story about a queer chefess, and it was taped by Empowerhouse Radio. Well, this gentleman approached me after and said, I would love to talk to you next week. Is that cool? All right, cool. Who are you? My name's Armando. I'm Ale. Great. Let's hook up next week. after our conversation, sitting down in this tiny little office, he goes, how would you feel if I gave you a radio show? And I said, excuse me, can you repeat that again? The reason being is I had been manifesting a radio show for the past 2 years. My friends have always told me, Ale, that voice you have, you need to use it on the radio. Well, guess where I ended up at? On the radio. When you speak into existence, you know, this is what I want. It found me. It found me. And Armando was so gracious, and he said, what are you going to call your show? And in that instant moment, Dr. Tafoya came into my mind. Plática. This is going to be called Plática y Poetics. I want to spotlight San Antonio's artists and our poetry and our literacy and all of the artists of San Antonio. And I've been given that beautiful opportunity. Thank you, Armando. Thank you, Dr. Tafoya. Not only that, I said, I had her in my mind for one of my first interviews. Now, it was probably a Tuesday or Wednesday. I'm a teacher, so you know, I'm doing the teacher thing after work. And I called my good friend Alex. I said, Alex, girl, we have to go to Dr. Tafoya's house. We are doing the interview at Dr. Tafoya's house. You're gonna come with me, girlfriend. Let's do it. She is my photographer and lovely poet as well. So she meets me at Dr. Tafoya's house. We're both very nervous, okay? Walking into Dr. Tafoya's house. Beautiful home. It's as if you walked into your tia's house with every picture on the wall, letting you feel at home. The vibe in there was of Mexico, of our Latinidad. And I felt under a spell, but of confianza, which is trust. And I was entrusted in that moment to listen and to chronicle and to write down her story. That was a pivotal moment in my life when she told me, Ale, you are doing the work now. After I told her, thank you for doing the work for me. My life shifted in that moment. And I noticed and I knew that this project working, transmitting to the airwaves was bigger than me. It is getting those stories out there of our artists, of our storytellers, transmitting and transmuting out to this world. With that being said, I'm the creator of Plática y Poetics. And if you want to tune into 101.5, you know where to find me. It has been a journey to hear myself on the radio. One of my good friends said, Ale, how did you feel listening to yourself? I said, I learned the power of the voice, not just the voice of my voice now. Muchas gracias. This is Alejandra from Empower House Radio 101.5, Plática y Poetics. Thank you for listening. Gracias.
Thanks for sharing your journey. Worth Repeating returns this fall, and I want to hear from you. Take some time and tell us what you thought of this past season. Suggest some themes for next year, or maybe just give us our flowers. Visit tpr.org/WR and fill out the survey today. Not a survey guy or gal? You can shoot me an email directly at worthrepeating@tpr.org.
This program was made possible with support from the 80/20 Foundation, striving to transform San Antonio by issuing grants to public charities that attract, grow, and retain San Antonio's future workforce. For this and more information, visit 8020foundation.com.
Storyteller is Kristen Paredes. Kristen shares a story about a desire to be in the medical field with a little less blood.
The year was 2008, and I was 13 years old, so rightfully, it was time to start thinking about the future. So me and my parents devised a plan for me to become all that I could be, which we decided would be a doctor. Simple. The future was planned out. And it was super simple to think about, but very difficult to execute because I have a problem with fainting. And I didn't know that until I started shadowing my dentist. So I don't know if you guys have ever smelled or encountered a gangrenous tooth or a root canal, but once they started drilling, I started feeling nauseous, more nauseous than when they came in. Down I went and I got injured. And the next one that I shadowed was a podiatrist. And a podiatrist is a foot doctor. So even better. So I was okay the first few ingrown toenails, but when a person started jerking their foot away and crying, I was like, all right, I'm going down. So I couldn't handle blood. I could not handle the person reacting in real time. So I thought, well, maybe I'll just go ahead and work on dead people. I love Forensic Files. I love Dr. G. Dr. G. There you go. I'll just work on dead people. They can't react unless they're having rigor mortis. So I hit up my uncle. I'll use his real name because I'm going to say it. My Uncle Willie. So I was like, hey, Theo, can you let me see what you do day to day? And he was like, of course. I've never had that question before. And he said to make sure to wear all black, which was perfect because I was goth at the time. So I rolled up with my mom at the funeral home. I stepped out of the car and went to his office, which was, of course, filled with caskets and urns. What else? And just looking at the caskets, I was like, oh, man, that makes me claustrophobic just looking at it. So, nope. We're not doing that. We're getting cremated. Somehow that's more appealing because the urns were cute. The urns were like pink and yellow or whatever color you want. And there was ones for people who were into like, or they served in the military. The one that baffled me was the camouflage urn. Go ahead and fill in the blank with a joke. Because, you know, they're dead. Who are they hiding from? So after that, my uncle was like, well, let's go and look at the morgue. All right, here we go. Let's see if I can handle that. So we go out to the icebox, that big portable. So we go up the steps. And on the last step, he turns to me, said, now prepare yourself, because there's a fella in here getting embalmed. And he turns to the door, and I was like, all right, whatever that means. Prepare myself for seeing this. And sure enough, opens the door, and there's a fella in there getting embalmed. And in one tube is going clear fluid, and out the other tube is coming out red fluid, and the person is turning in different colors. And I was like, all right, okay, I can handle this. The smell is of death and chemicals. And right next to him is a lady who is getting her hair did and her makeup also done. And they have a picture of her from when she was alive. And then I see her on there, the table, dead, obviously. And they're trying to color match. And I was like, oh, God. What if I die on my face, you know? So I was like, yes, even more reason not to do the casket thing. Caskets are out. So the next adventure we go on is lunch, because that's exactly what you want to do after spending time in a freezer with a lot of dead people. So we got burgers. Yes, we did. And he told me what we were doing before we went. And I just was like in la la land. I didn't really pay attention. And so we were in the car eating some burgers. And I was like, hey, what are we doing actually? Where are we going? You said we were going somewhere. And he was like, yeah, we're going to drop this guy off, this fella off. He loves using the word fella. And I was like, this fella, what are you talking about? You know? And I kept hearing like a tum, tum, tum in the back when we were turning the car. And I was like, you know, let me look over there. There's a box the size of a human body in the back. And I'm realizing, oh, we're in a hearse. We are in a hearse and I didn't even realize it. So I've been eating this hamburger with a dead body in the background. So I was like, oh, okay. So we drove off to the crematory, and the owner of the crematory was basically like, hi, you're here for, you know, uncle niece day, and this is a furnace. And I was like, a furnace? It's summer, it's hot. And also it's hot because of the furnace. So he opens it up because he asked me, you know, do you want to see it? And I said, of course, because I'm goth. So he opens it up and it's like, hell. He's like, oh, okay. So casket versus urn, both are terrible. I don't ever want to die. And so, yeah, it's just as scary as you would imagine. There is like the outline of where the person was laying and it's slowly disintegrating. And I'm like, oh God. So he slams it shut and he's like, what do you think? I'm like, yes. That is how you turn people to dust. So needless to say, right now I'm a speech language pathologist. I can handle spit more than I can handle blood, but the moral of the story is try it because, you know, I love this story. It's one of my favorite memories of all time. So thank you for letting me share it with you.
It's safe to say that some jobs aren't for everyone.
This program was made possible by the City of San Antonio Department of Arts and Culture, striving to enrich the quality of life of San Antonio residents and visitors by creating art programming and helping people experience art. For this and more information, visit getcreativesanantonio.com.
Our next storyteller is Elliot Weisberg. Elliot shares a story about his first TV broadcast.
So, people say that you shouldn't meet your heroes. And I don't know if that's true, you know, for all role models, but I do know that that for sure is true if your role model happens to be Charlie Brown. Yes. So, a long, long time ago, in a place not all that far from here, in a year they called 2021, long, long time ago, I had just graduated college. So, when I graduated with a degree in radio, TV, and film communications. And when I graduated, I immediately started applying to every single job that I could find at a news station that had a job opening. And, you know, previously to this point, all of my work experience has been as a line cook in kitchens, except for a very brief position filming high school football for a public service like local television station, a public access channel. And when I was working in restaurants at those jobs, you know, I learned how to sear steaks, shuck oysters, and smoke cigarettes. But honestly, a lot of the chefs took a ton of time out of their day to show me, you know, different tricks and tips, things that they had learned throughout their years in the industry. And they really spent a lot of time training me. And then I finally, after applying to like 100 of these jobs at these news stations, I finally got a job in San Antonio at a local news station that will not be named. If you do your research, you can probably figure it out. But I got this job and, you know, to my shock, I was really nervous because this is my first big boy job. And they spent almost zero to no time training me. They basically were like, here's how to turn the camera on. Here's the shelf you put it on when you're done. And so like the first couple of weeks, I asked every single question I could possibly think of because I was terrified of either making myself or somebody else look bad on live television. That was like my biggest fear. So, I don't know. It was about either like the second or third day of the second or third week I've been working this job, and I got assigned my very first live interview in the field. And I was really nervous. So I showed up to work early, and I got all my camera batteries, I got all my microphone batteries, all the cables I needed. I loaded up the van and I started driving over. And on the drive, I didn't know what to expect. All I knew is that I was going to a corn maze at a flea market. That's all I knew. And then what I found out when I got there, I was pleasantly surprised when I got out of the car because it was gorgeous. It was, you know, like this giant corn maze. And this giant, you know, there were huge pumpkins everywhere. There were giant cardboard cutouts of all your favorite Peanuts characters. There was Snoopy and Linus and Woodstock. It was a perfect, like, family-friendly location for us to put on our morning show. And then Charlie Brown showed up. And he made a bold entrance. I saw him feet first. He kicked his way out of an Uber with Charlie Brown shoes on. Yellow Vans with the black zigzag. And the first thing that was the first thing I saw. And then the first thing I heard was him shouting crazy homophobic comments about Ryan Seacrest. He was like, "Who wants to watch him on a New Year's Eve party? I should be on the New Year's Eve party. I'm Charlie Brown." Evidently, he had smoking several cigarettes since Charlie Brown and the Great Pumpkin. So then, you know, as I'm thinking, you know, this is kind of wild, but, you know, first impressions aren't always accurate, so I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. And as I'm thinking about this, he starts walking up to me. I realize he's making a beeline directly towards me. And before he's fully in earshot, he's going through a laundry list of, you know, requests and complaints. And as soon as he gets an earshot, I can hear what he's saying. He's saying, "Why is the reporter not here? How come I'm talking to her in an earpiece?" And I said, "Listen, man, you know, there's a lot of segments in our show. There's a lot of, you know, sometimes that's how live television works." And he goes, "Well, if that's the case, pull her up on your phone so I can see how hot she is. If she's worth talking to." I was like, "Sir, I'm not going to do that for you. Absolutely not. Here's your microphone." So I give him his microphone, and immediately he goes into more complaints. He goes, and this is my favorite one. He said, "Why is it morning?" Yeah. Now I'm Jewish, so people have, you know, blamed me for the weather. But never before has somebody asked me, "Why is it morning?" It's a pretty regular cycle, you know what I mean? So at that point, after that, he goes... He continues, and I didn't really realize what he was saying, but he goes, "Why is it morning? I'm Charlie Brown. I should be on primetime." He refers to himself as Charlie Brown the whole time, by the way. "I'm Charlie Brown. I should be on primetime." At this point, I'm getting a little fed up, so I say, "You know, I'm not your agent, man. I'm just the camera guy. If you want me booking your gigs, I'm going to take 10%. And then his eyes widen, and he takes a pause. And he leans in real close, and he bends down, and he reads my name off my name tag. And he says, "Elliot Weisberg. You wouldn't happen to be a Jew, would you?" I said, "I certainly am, man. I definitely am." To which he didn't respond. He responded by taking three giant steps back from me, whispering something to his assistant that I never heard. And I don't know what he said, but I can't assume it was all that positive. I don't think you make a comment like that and then whisper to your assistant, like, you know, "I love Seinfeld." You know, I don't think that's what it was. So that's what he doesn't say anything directly to me then the entire rest of the evening or the rest of the morning. So now it's time for the interview. And he puts the earbud in and then he won't spit his gum out. I'm sure you guys aren't going to be shocked by how this is going so far that the interview didn't go great. He was chewing gum like a cow the entire time, loudly into the microphone, so much so that it's overpowering the volume of the questions that the reporter is asking. One of the questions, obviously, was, what was it like to be Charlie Brown, you know, in Charlie Brown and the Great Pumpkin? What was it like to voice that iconic character? To which he replied, well, I'm going to be honest with you. When you're in prison, surrounded by murderers and rapists, it's important to remember that the answer to life is love. Now, we're on live television. It's essentially my first day. I don't know if I should cut his mic, if I should turn the camera, if I should just start filming corn. I don't know what the fuck to do. I don't know if I'm supposed to say that. sorry, Tori. So then, I don't know what to do. We have a second interview that's supposed to take place after that. While I'm freaking out, shaking the camera, the reporter takes the cue. I should probably end this interview early. So she ends the interview early. She gets out of there. And then I made the call. I was like, we should cancel this second interview. This should not be happening. Which I was glad to not have to do a second interview with this guy. But then I looked at the owner of the corn maze, who has now realized that the guy who he has hired to spend the next 3 days with signing autographs for families and children is a complete lunatic. And so I was happy to have canceled the second interview. But not before I did that, in the break, he goes to the car, does, you know, some sniffly drugs, and then grabs edibles to offer to the entire crew. And I was like, no, I'm at work, and it's Texas. Unfortunately, if I could do edibles with Charlie Brown, it might make this whole thing worth it. So I wasn't able to do that. I'm packing up the van. I'm driving home. And somebody made the horrible call to ask him what he went to jail for. Which he replied by saying, somebody stole my Snoopy. Which we later found out was code for I stalked my ex-girlfriend. And the plastic surgeon who she left me for. Because I felt the need to give her death threats and him death threats after they had left me because I paid for her new breasts. Quote unquote. So, you know, people always say you shouldn't meet your heroes. People always say first impressions may not be accurate, but I'll let you be the judge.
I think it's safe to say that some guys are better animated than in person. Worth Repeating relies on supporters like you. Supporting your favorite programs is important now more than ever. I ask you every show, and now I'm asking you every podcast. If Worth Repeating is a program that you turn to with fidelity, consider becoming a new or increasing your sustaining membership. You can do so by visiting tpr.org and clicking the red donate button today. You can leave a personalized note and tell them Tori said, meow, 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 meow.
This program is made possible by the Lifshutz Foundation, an arts, culture, and humanities fundraising organization.
Our next storyteller is Scott Ramos. Scott shares a story about an untrustworthy delivery guy. Spoiler alert, it's him.
Yeah, I'm the untrustworthy delivery driver, thanks. It's weird, like, so, as a delivery driver, like, dudes ask questions, but it's only dudes. And, like, the first question is always, like, has anyone ever answered the door naked? No. One time a girl did answer the door in her underwear. And I was like, what'd she look like? She looked like me. She just had better hair. Slow down. It's weird. So, yeah, I did steal y'all shit. I'm sorry. We're going to pay for this up front. So, like, before there were porch pirates, we were truck thieves. So the shit didn't even make it to the porch because we had already had it. Thank you. And it was weird because like we had a crew. I had a crew of guys. I needed money. We all needed money like really bad. Like really bad. Fucking rent. And nice. Like we had a crew of guys. Like they had we had worked previous jobs together and they brought me in for this job. People always ask me questions like, did you feel bad? No. I wasn't stealing y'all's medicine. Like, I was stealing y'all's shoes and shit. You know, all right, another one I get is like, what was the hardest shit to sell? I got a dildo. Like, would y'all buy a dildo from me? Albeit, it's still in the case. But I can't tell you where I got it from. That's Jakey laughing somewhere. All right, so the crew we had, it was like four of us. We had three rules. It was no selling to coworkers, no posts on social media, and don't get carried away. One of us was like mad older than all of us, so he was like, y'all are gonna fuck this up, so these are the rules. Play your part. And I thought following two out of three rules was good. It was so easy to steal, I got carried away. I used to hate, people used to piss me off so much when they would try to haggle with me. Like that was disrespectful. I know it's stolen, but I'm giving you pennies on the dollar to begin with. If I give you something $300, you're like, I'll give you 12 bucks. I'm like, get fucked. So I got carried away. I was really good about that. I mean, it almost felt like they were entrapping us to get carried away. It was so easy. And like people talk, like, here's a side note. People always like say shit about drug dealers. I'm not that. But they're always saying stuff like, you know, quit while you're ahead. Quit while you're ahead. It's not that easy. Like, it's really addicting when you're making money. Just not legally. Pray for drug dealers. And the funny thing is like, if you do stop stealing shit, like 30 days from now, the bill man still comes. Yeah, he gets it. My man. And I found out why rule number three was don't get carried away after I got carried away, because then it leads to an investigation. And I got investigated. But I mean, the crew was smart. We had a mole on the inside working with us. So, like, as the investigation's happening, we're getting all the information with us. So, and it was weird. Like, I would do my route. Like, I would just drive, and I would notice cars in the warehouse on my route. Right? That doesn't make sense. It's like, oh, he's following me. I was like, all right. So, I told the crew. You know what? All right. I told the crew, and they're like, you fucking idiot. Why would you ever? But they didn't tell me we had a mole on the inside at the beginning. So I'm like on FBI.gov. Like, what's the statute of limitations? Every day it felt like a raid was gonna happen at my apartment. Dude, I had so many fucking sleepless nights. Like, I mean, like bags under the eye, sleepless. Like, I remember a coworker was like, hey, Scott, are you okay? And I can't be like, oh, they're investigating me over there. No. So I thought like the coolest thing I could say at the time, I was like, let's just say there was Coke, there were straws, nobody was drinking. It came out, the investigation did its whole thing. They ran its course. And I guess I did good by stealing y'all shit. I beat it. It was crazy. And then... So... It was like... It got to the point where, like, they're like, yo, just stop. Just stop. The crew was like, stop. You can't do this. The three of us will take it from here. And I kept working there, and I was just like, all right, I'll never do this again. But then the bills come. I was like, all right, this time, you know what? Just one or two a month. That's it. I'll never do it again. I swear. And then, nice. Gotcha. And then I was like, all right, I'll just do one or two a month and I'm done. And my check got shorted and I fucking quit. Now, a lot of people are always asking, like, what if it happened to you? You know, Karens. And it did happen to me. I got my girlfriend a really bomb-ass Christmas gift. And it got stolen. And you know what? I'm an adult. I charged it to the game. Thank you.
We hope the statute of limitations are in fact expired. That's it for the Worth Repeating podcast. Do us a favor and give us a like, subscribe, or review us wherever you stream podcasts. Stay tuned for part two of the live event on the theme Transmitted, streaming everywhere you stream podcasts, coming soon. Worth Repeating is made possible by the 8020 Foundation, the City of San Antonio Department of Arts and Culture, and the Lifshutz Foundation. Worth Repeating is a production of Texas Public Radio. I'm Tori Poole. Thanks for listening.